Welcome to another episode of the No Time to Be Offended podcast, hosted by Matt Christopher and Dan Adler. Settle in, listen, and learn what drives them to share their knowledge and experiences with the hope it gets you thinking about a different perspective on life. Over to you, Matt and Dan.
G'day, Simon. How are you?
Yeah, good, Dan. Thanks for having us on the pod, mate. Really keen to see what we've got to talk about today. Shame we haven't got Matt here.
Where's Matt?
Yeah.
He's got the flu.
Down with the flu a bit.
Yeah.
But unfortunate, as much as I love you like a brother, mate, I was looking forward to having a bit of a chat with Matt. He's always good value.
Yeah, it is a shame. He was really keen to talk to you because he's in the construction industry as well, like you are, and he's got a question for you. But Simon, it is a real honour and a privilege to have you on our ninth episode, our ninth podcast, and we're inching closer towards the 12th, 13th, and hopefully we get there soon and keep our listeners entertained and engaged. But we thought it's a great time for you to be stepping in for Matt and filling in for Matt and bring something new to the podcast. We've never had a speaker before.
Yeah, well, it's worked out quite well, I suppose, in that respect. I don't know how the podcast would go, just Dan talking to himself, but that could be quite, that could be something to explore later on.
What brings you to town?
We're over for a week. I'm over for a week. We've had our corporate golf day in association with Main Football Club. It's become a bit of a tradition, actually. It's where our founder, Guy, has been involved, and his kids have been through there, and he's involved, so we've got a close association with them. And then we've got the World Timber Engineering Conference being held this week in Brisbane for the first time ever, and we've been given the privilege of hosting a whole lot of delegates at our timber building, which is in Kangaroo Point. It's actually still the tallest timber residential building in Australia, so that's pretty exciting. It was the Southern Hemisphere, but I don't want to misquote.
I'm glad that you've told me that, because I drove past it the other day. It's Monterey, is it?
That's right.
Yeah. And I said to my boys, see that building there? It's the tallest timber structure. The concrete and steel is used mostly in other buildings, but this is timber, and that's been your birth vision, Gardner Vaughan Group, as a specialist in timber.
Yeah, well, I particularly love to talk about our ancestry and the path that our story of Gardner Vaughan Group, and it did originate, as you say, probably the first seed was Guy doing his engineering degree, and then that led him to do some postgraduate work over at UQ, in which time he got introduced to the Timber Hub, fell in love with timber, and saw that there was so many benefits there for, you know, sustainability, but also just efficiencies and aesthetics. And, ironically, you wouldn't associate it with timber, but mass timber actually performs much better than steel and fire. So he got really passionate about this, developed a couple of proprietary products and partnered up, and, you know, through plenty of, there's probably another podcast worth of stories there that has led to, all the different forks in the road, us being a, you know, builder developer. That designs our own buildings and sells residential apartments from the Gold Coast to the Sunshine Coast through Brisbane. And, that's what we do. But, yeah, timber very much is the first genesis of the first problem that Guy was looking to solve. Mm. And it's all the problems that we've come across since that's seen us evolve to what we are now.
So for the listeners, you might have detected there's a bit of an accent there. There's tumba and across the Dutch.
That's it.
And so the leading question of what brings you here this week and just recently with all these events that you've been hosting, you live, your family's over in New Zealand, and you have that pattern of going back home and then coming back over here to Australia. And just tell us a little bit about who Simon Betteridge.
Yeah, well, I suppose starting career-wise, post leaving school, I worked for my father's firm for a little while, studied quantity surveying, and then decided I didn't really sort of know enough about the actual building part, so then went and got my hands dirty for sort of 5 to 8 years or so, I'm not sure. And in 2005, after a particularly cold winter and just looking to spread wings a little bit, we looked at coming to Queensland and got introduced to Guy, Gardner Vaughan Group, the company I've been with ever since we moved over here. And 18 years later, post COVID, and you know, the what that showed us about the ability to work remotely, which is going to tie, I think, into some of the topics we're going to be talking about today. And both of our parents having a few health issues, we saw the opportunity maybe to trial working from New Zealand. So we've, the last 3 years now, I've been over in NZ and moving, flying backwards and forwards fairly frequently, you know, usually every couple of weeks.
Big family, family of three?
Yep, family of three. So my wife Bex and I, we moved over in 2005 and we went back with three Cozzies, three Kiwi Aussies. daughter Mabel and our two boys that seem to be growing up at a fast rate of knots, Sid and Albie.
So. And they've been eating life up, I'm sure, just like you have with your sports and riding and trekking.
Yep, pretty much every day. It's a early start, dropping one or both of them down to school for some form of sport or other activity, and we usually don't see them back until dark or well after, depending on whether it's basketball or golf or cricket. Mabel plays soccer, like your son Nate. Mm. So, yeah, no, it's pretty full on, but it's wouldn't have it any other way. It's good fun, and you know that family side, which is you know, such an important anchor for everyone to have that rock behind them, was really at the centre of that that move back to New Zealand, and yeah, that sees us where we are today. I'm here in a rare weekend back in Brisbane. Talking
yeah,
to you.
Like I said, it's a real privilege. Thank you for giving up your time, your valuable time. And thank you to your family and your friends who you've invested your time with us here today, with me. You've met my wife and my kids. And I think that's the growing relationship outside of the work. You know, the moment I met you, and I've said this to you many times, really impressed with you as a human. You've got that real good balance between pushing yourself physically and mentally to achieve and do amazing things, but also you're very centered, and I think you're grounded and you understand what's important and you prioritize. And you know, you're an inspiring guy for me, and it's a real privilege to have you on our podcast, because we want people to listen to our contribution in each episode and hopefully be inspired, be curious, maybe think about things a little bit differently. And maybe, you know, take a leaf out of Simon's book of what he's been doing and apply it in your own life. So how did we meet? Just take us back.
Yeah, well, I had, when I was still living in Australia, I think I might have been around about the time of with COVID, and I was doing doing some in an exercise group outside Suncorp Stadium and talking, as you do, about anything and everything. We were coming across some sort of marketing challenges as we were going, and I knew that one of the guys there, John Walklate, who we've since found really closely associated with you guys, had said, hey, look, working with these creatives, best guys we've ever worked with. And we'd always been a little bit cautious of working with, you know, agencies and whatnot, because they couldn't get to know us. And he said, no, look, I'm pretty sure you're going to find that these are the guys. They will working with you, they'll actually become part of your story and work alongside and really want to get in the DNA of your business. And so I had a long chat with you and very kind words you said there, mate, but you know, I even in that first, you know, 45 minute conversation that we had was pretty unusual for, you know, a first call. But you know, from then and every single probably conversation we've had, we've gone pretty deep.
Even
and,
the drive up in your Mustang up to go to Coolum. Was it Coolum? No, Boccarina.
Boccarina, yeah.
Yeah, we got to ask some questions, and that was a beautiful car. I'm sure you miss it.
I do, yeah. But no, I remember that fondly, and right, you know, I can only echo the same sentiments that you very kindly dished out there, and I suppose, you know, like-minded people attract one another and work together, and those are the partnerships that endure.
And thank you, John Walklate, for the introduction. I'm forever in your debt. You've been a big fan of Next Thursday, and we continue to enjoy that relationship working on his business, Occupy Property, a tenant leasing agency. And they're on another level. That was the strap line that we gave them, because they occupy a space that is on the rooftop in where Anzac Square is. And it's a phenomenal place. And John and Wendy have been a major impact on our family life and work life. So thank you, John. And now we fast forward. I think we are onto our seventh building for you, for Garden of Orne. I lost track with the numbers, but it's more than five.
It doesn't seem like more than a couple of years ago that we first had that drive up, but I suppose I've probably not had the Mustang for a couple of years, so it must have been. But we're picking up new properties all the time now, so every conversation we sort of have, it seems to be that we're working on a new project together.
So you position yourself as a builder-developer or developer-builder. I noticed that the strap line next to your logo changed recently.
Yeah, I don't think that there's any particular preference as long as that it's all in there, and we'd like to fit the whole thing in there because we do the whole lot. We acquire the land, we work through the DA and develop the vision, we design in-house, we construct in-house, and we sell and manage properties afterwards. So we're really end-to-end, so you could probably fit everything that we do into what we do. But I think probably our key differentiator, and it's a real competitive advantage of ours at the moment, with construction costs being so high and scarcity of trades being what it is, that we are a builder developer, and we're really seeing the only people that are throwing buildings up at the moment are and have that construction ability in house. So,
Can you just paint a picture of the current state? Like, what's the landscape like? What's the complexion of the building industry like? Like the building industry, and particularly with apartment living, because that's after all what you specialise in, versus residential homes like a Stockland, for example. There's been supply and demand, and there's been changes in the Brisbane market in particular, and Southeast Queensland as well. You want to be Southeast Queensland's builder developer of choice.
Yeah, it's obviously every industry, every market just went crazy after COVID and the years following in 2021, 22, 23. I suppose things have levelled out a little in terms of staff and workers. There were some days that we would have entire subby crews just not turn up onto a site, or we were hampered by... our program was hampered by the ability to get boots on the ground, and there was a 20% increase across all construction in Queensland in duration.
Cost.
And that was, and cost, probably far in excess of 20% with the cost, but 30. Just time, the ability to actually deliver. Mm. And it didn't matter whether you were big, small, whether you were the biggest builder in Australia or not, everyone was having the same issues. So that subsided to some degree, but there's sort of converging headwinds for head and tailwinds for the construction and property industry. There's work out there to do because there's a supply demand imbalance in housing that's having an impact at absolutely all levels and all markets, whether it's standalone houses. Obviously, the scarcity of land, and if you're wanting to have your house and land package, you're signing up to a 1 hour commute every day.
Yeah, out towards Toowoomba,
and that has issues. It's not necessarily what people move to Queensland. They probably move here looking to look at the sunny beaches and whatnot, and they're moving further away from those things. But then reconciling that, my alternative is living up, and that might not also be what they were looking at, but. There is plenty of demand there, but the cost points have gone up significantly. Property has really risen in price over the last few years, so there's plenty of work there to be done. The cost is somewhat prohibitive to sort of allow people that might be in the market to be in there, so you've got more people living with parents or staying in share houses a bit longer. And then we've got the supply imbalance in actual construction workers. There's a real shortage of trades. I think that's a result of many things, but I don't think that as an industry and governments have really pushed trades as an option that should be championed for a long time. And really it's only a reaction to the shortage and the looming shortage and exacerbated in Queensland here by the need to deliver the Olympics.
Yep.
Where being a tradie, tradies are given a pretty bad rap out there.
Yeah, 20, 30 years ago, they would be looked down upon, and now they're driving with the latest Raptors, Ford Raptors with jet skis and the ones with all the money.
They are, but I think when you're looking at, like yourself, you've got two boys going out into the world, or about to. Mm-hmm. You're, as a parent, you're wanting them to go into a trade that's going to, or a vocation that's going to see them, you know, set themselves up for the best life possible and doing something they love. I don't think that necessarily everyone values trades as a viable option going forward. Whereas I think if you look into it, exactly what you say, yeah, people, it does open up a great many options. Doesn't mean that you're going to be wearing high vis and out on the site for the rest of your life.
I think it's a good pickup line at a nightclub. What do you do? I'm a plumber. Right, I'm going home with him.
Yeah,
well, it worked a few years ago.
Maybe 5-10 years ago, it was just, I think the majority of parents would be horrified if their child said, I wasn't going to go and do a degree.
Why was that?
I really don't know, because, I mean, obviously I've been through it, brought up, I'm a third-generation builder.
Mm.
So there was never any question of that being an option. So of my brothers, my two brothers and I, my middle brother, Andrew, was the only one that actually went and got a bachelor degree. Mm. So I've got a tertiary qualification in quantity surveying, and my other brother's a diesel mechanic. And we're all doing pretty well. I just don't know why that hasn't been the case, but it's like you're in the marketing game. I suppose at a government level and at an industry level, you need to champion your career pathways and market those against going and doing becoming an accountant or a lawyer.
So I've got a question for you. Garden of Lawn Group, or GVG as we call it, have been very successful in planning and picking a price point that you think that once you hand the keys over to the owner of the apartment, the occupier, that within that time frame from first saying, okay, you've got DA, BA approval and go, there are other builders that have struggled. And I know Kevin Seymour, for example, he's very firm that I want to have a fixed cost. I want to know what I'm dealing with so I know how much money I'm extracting at the end, and that I'm not in a situation where I've got to go to the market or whoever's signed on and put their deposits down and say, I'm really sorry, it's gone up 30% since we first did the initial contract. Is there a technique to that, keeping your subbies or the people that work for you and see that through from start to end of a project, particularly with your pipeline of projects that are coming online, being able to have a good reputation for that alone? It seems to be a hot topic.
At subby level, it's always been fairly well a fixed price environment, and I think that's because it's just easier to manage for both parties, and it gives more certainty to have that. More and more, we're seeing that developers, clients, and builders are actually having to partner. And because we're going through a cycle where there's probably a power balance towards a builder, there's more customers or clients or developers that need builders than builders that need them. They can pick and choose their work. And at the moment, there's government work and commercial work, which is pretty attractive. So especially in the residential sector, which is a little bit more complex, because you're basically building, you know, we're building 120 homes within a development, whereas a commercial builder might be delivering one commercial building for one client or one stadium for the government. So that's where we see builder developers are really the only ones that are putting up buildings at the moment. You're looking at your Mosaics, you're looking at your McNabs, and then you're seeing the likes of Hutchies, the biggest privately held construction business in Australia, being able to work only, pick and choose which partners they have. And those contracts are looking a lot different. They're ensuring that the risk is shared. So price escalation risk is shared, where they will fix what they call preliminaries. So the builder's overhead costs and staffing costs, they'll fix that. But they're not going to take on the size projects they are, which could be running over 3 or 4 years any longer than any more than with maybe a 50-50 share of risk.
So. And at some point you have to finish that project, because the money that you make on that project is going to help fund the next project.
Yep. Yeah, and that's the model for us now, that we've instigated a four project model over 2 years. So we're effectively starting a new project every 6 months, just so that we can smooth that out. And that's to try and avoid the need to have these peaks and troughs of our maximum staff, and trying to have to hire in new staff and let staff go because we've got a lull in work between projects. We want to smooth that out as much as possible. We want to get the same thing with in terms of our equity, and have a equity sort of just going from one job to the next, having our subcontractors and our consultants, they're always just, they work on a design a project for 6 months and they move on to design the next one. Our consultants finish a project, then they've got another project to go straight on to. So
you don't lose them.
Yeah. And so if you've got four projects running, you've basically got one project at the start, one project approaching the end, and two projects sort of at various points in the middle. And those trades that are involved at those times in the project have the opportunity to be able to work on, you know, constantly on a GBG project because they're a good partner or a good staff member.
It's a good segue for us to just circle back to the topic of this episode. We wrote down work-life blend. Some people, you know, work-life balance is very commonly used. It's the same type of thing, basically, work-life blend. Starting off as a family-owned business and those values, even with Hutchies, they, you know, see themselves as that, and that's attractive. And, you know, what you were just talking about a second ago of keeping your employees or your team members engaged and in having a good life at work, but equally, you know, body, mind, spirit, that they're engaged outside of work, that they're getting the best out of their life, their full potential, and having fun, and that shows up in the work, and there's harmony. I was just thinking, I had this picture in my mind a second ago, that GBG is almost like changing gears from first to second to third. When you've just changed a gear from first into second, there's that little bit at the start where you get that like turbo lag almost, and you're waiting for the things to hit that sweet spot where it's now humming again, and you've got that sweet spot with the bell curve, and then you're getting to a point where you're like, okay, we're almost at burnout, you need to red line, change it down into another gear, and then you're getting more power, more traction, more purchase, more agency to do more. Trying to find, you're scaling at the moment, you're on a growth phase, and talent, managing talent and culture is one of the biggest challenges when you scale up. Keeping the family values core and what's attractive and what works well with that. Putting the power and the responsibility of your leaders in your business, and equally giving them room to grow, but also checking in on them. I think it's a good segue to talk about how do we give people the room and the space to own it, be self-directed, feel empowered, and they celebrate their own successes because they see those successes in their own growth in their career that makes up probably a lot more than just the salary alone.
Yeah, I think it's actually really simple yet really hard to achieve. But I suppose the first thing I'd say is that whatever you do, it needs to be authentic, and it needs to be based off some sound, genuine, you know, values that you that go back to why you started your business or how you see the world and what you want to provide to everyone that the business is involved with, because you know, a business is just a collection of resources and people and processes that are all geared towards a common goal. So to have, you know, partners, staff members working with you and your processes and being motivated to achieve your goal, they need to be motivated to push in that direction, not have you push them. And if you're clear on what it is that you're wanting to achieve, the culture that you want to have in the business, and by culture I mean the way that people behave when you're not there, then the right people should want to work with you. And ideally, you know, through the times we're in at the moment, we've got scarcity of staff, and it's, you know, hard to get staff, particularly in the construction area of the business. Or when it's a time when you know, maybe the economy's down a bit and there's a few jobs around, our approach to how we treat our people is, you know, a long-term vision. And that comes from care and a genuine willingness to want to have an outcome where it is win-win, where it's a rising tides approach, where as we grow as a company, we will grow as our people grow. You're not just here to, you know, push hard for no reward. You're here to learn and grow. And whether you're here for a short time or a long time, if you grow while you're here, you've just lifted our boat a little bit more, and that brings about purpose. And yes, you need to pay the market rates. That all goes part and parcel with caring. If you're if you've gone and got your people to drink the Kool-Aid and trying to put them on a guilt trip to stay with you because you know, on a low salary, it's only going to last so long. It all goes hand in hand. But I think to have somewhere where people want to come to work, where they feel that they've got ownership, they're given some accountability and license to to be a part of it and have the ability to share in that. And, you know, you saw a bit of that with the all the partners and the staff and whatnot the other day.
I don't see that very often, getting everyone together to celebrate the end of the handing over of the keys to the occupiers, the owners. It's a real honour to be invited and to even just ask people, what do you do? Oh, I'm the surveyor. What do you do? I pour the concrete. What do you do? I'm responsible for the steel beams. And it's an army of people. And to see them all really stoked to be there in the room and to be acknowledged and valued by you guys. But there's a mental health aspect to what we as employers need to ensure, that we're watching and checking in on people, that they've got enough harmony in their life, not just all one thing and burning out. Do you want to talk to, are there changes that you've seen of late? Maybe COVID introduced the work from home concept, and I know from talking with other friends in the industry from Charter Hall, represent the owner of the building, the landlord. John Walklate from Occupy Property, he represents the tenant. We've just recently had a client, Def Lottery, who just recently did a rebrand of their brand logo, their positioning, their campaign, which launched last week, built by next Thursday. Thank you, Def Lottery, for trusting in us. But they've just recently consolidated 5 different buildings into one location, and bringing all those different people from working at Maruka to working in South Bank. And transportation, how do I get there? What am I going to have for lunch? What's the safety of catching a train or a bus when I'm so familiar with what my environment is now after all this time? Getting people to come back to work and sit down at an office desk, or the likes of Chris Yule and Mark Powell from Rival Media, they have regulated Tuesday is the work from home day, and other days you're expected in the office. I know an advertising agency used to be called GPYNR. I think it's VMLYNR, or it's an alphabet soup. But they've just mandated all their creative agency staff to be back at work. I think it was 4 days a week, whereas previous till now, it's like, well, as an employer, you've got to go with the flow. And if they want to work remotely and work from home, you just got to go with the flow. So there is a shift to bring people back. And I think it, you know, even from America, when Donald Trump's come into power, all the government workers, he wants to see bums on seats. The building's full of human beings. And I think here in Australia, there's a real push to get people to come back. Why is there that push to come back from your point of view, I'll ask?
We've always been really big on having, you know, as you put it, bums on seats in the office. We've got a large office. It's not large enough at the moment because we've scaled as we have. We've gone from about 32 staff to 80 staff in the course of three and a half years.
How's the mental health of your HR department?
They're going good at the moment. Good. It's a lot easier than it was in 2022 when we were really scaling, and that was a pretty tough couple of years when we were pushing hard and not necessarily getting the results that we would have liked. But needed. We've learned a lot, and we've come out the other side a lot better. But I there's a lot that goes into why that would be, and I don't think that there's any there's no one solution. There's no I think the answer really is balance and working to all sorts of variables that might be the type of work they do. So, you know, we talked about mental health and out on the work site. You're obviously doing physical work. It's not really an option for tradies on the site to work from home. But there can be some flexibility in the way that they work to try and make sure that they're not, you know, pushing too hard or hours for too many days in a row, and that maybe if they're shearing early days or adjusting their hours just to make sure that there's a sustainable level of output and demand on them. I always say construction's like a combat sport. It's there's always, no sooner has one person finished their stage of works than the next person's got to be in behind them, and that person's got to go to another level. And
if someone's late or the concrete doesn't set or the flow-on effect is...
Yeah, but you've got rain, you've got material deliveries, there's 200,000+ bits of material that go into one building, different products and different types, and thousands of humans that need to come
in. We've seen it on the block when they've got all the different trades working together on top
of each other. Then you add in a bit of water and a bit of delay. it's just constant. There is you work on maybe a I don't know what it's like in a creative project, but you're sort of working towards a milestone. Well, these guys they've got multiple projects going on every day within that project. It's working towards a concrete pour, and there's a whole lot of things that have to come together, and then it has to be fine on that day. And if it rains, then everything goes out the window, and you've got to go in and try and rebook another concrete pour, and you've got to reschedule everyone that comes in after them. So there's just this absolute intensity onto them, and you know, mental health in the building industry is a real key thing there, and I don't think we, and I don't think the industry have got the answer to that yet. There has been trials of 5-day work weeks in the industry, and some of the EBAs, especially like the Star Casino, that was written into their EBA that Multiplex had to have a 5-day work week.
Which, to me, I asked this question when you told me that before we came on air. Hang on a second, I work a 5-day work week. In fact, my staff members, there's only one person, Andy Isles, our creative director, that's a 5-day-a-week full-time employee. Everyone else is freelancer 3 or 4 days a week because work-life balance is important to them. But when you say writing it into a contract of 5-day, are you saying that there's 6 and sometimes people working 7 days?
Yeah, it'd generally be a 5.5-day or a 6-day work week in most commercial construction sites.
Right.
And that's been sort of the way it has been for, I wouldn't say forever, but for a hell of a long time. And that has been worked into the expectations of customers in terms of delivery times, to your budgets in terms of overheads. If you're getting another 20% of time out of your projects every week, you're finishing 20% quicker, which means that you've got 20% less time that you're having to carry office staff on that project and your overheads and insurance and all that sort of thing. It obviously impacts the workers. They're used to a level of income. So whether you're tradies on the ground or whether you're a supervisor, the hours you work determine the income that you get. Or if you're on a salary as you're a supervisor or something like that, that salary is based on the fact that taking into account that you're working those extra hours. So, and then as an industry, you've got builders competing against each other. So we are in a competitive environment, and really to have that shift, and this conversation is going on in amongst the industry. There has been a little bit of a race to the bottom at various times with the competition between builders.
Mm-hmm.
But for that to change, it needs to change from top to bottom. Staff need to accept it, subbies need to accept it, clients need to accept it, builders need to accept it, and all builders need to accept it. Because if you are going to compete with, if you're going to go out and say, I'm going to work 5 days a week, and then another builder says, well, we'll work 6, we'll get your building done 20% quicker, and as a result, 2% cheaper. The client's not going to turn around and say, well, okay, well, your work well-being is up to you. I'll go with you and I'll turf the other guy out. It needs to be a bit of an industry shift. I think we're a while away from that. I'd like to see it, what we've done in in the past, or what we do currently, is a bit of a roster system. So our supervisors, because we only have direct supervisor employees, we don't have trade employees on our books, but we have supervisors on a roster system. Not every single tradie turns up on a Saturday. It's only the sort of the key trades that are pushing the critical path, as we call it.
Yep.
Or those trades that want to get a few extra hours because they're trying to, you know, up their income. Then you look back at the office, I suppose. There's a lot of things that go into having flexibility built in to the office. Yes, working from the office versus working from home, what that balance looks like. Is obviously there's more scope for that depending on your role, depending on your experience, depending on the interdependence of teams or the collaboration requirements. You know, most people can do some level of remote work, but it could look like the tree falling down in the background.
I can hear something.
It could look like reduced hours or different days, like you're talking with Andy. That we can have people working different days at home. Talking Chris was doing mandated Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
At home. I think it just needs to be a case by case basis. But I think in terms of what we value, getting back to your original question, we like having people in the office because we value that connection.
Mm.
We value that culture. We feel that. To be able to properly support, to be able to...
Knowledge sharing.
Yeah, share knowledge, to grow staff, and we're all growing. We all can learn off those little informal interactions within the office.
And you enjoy the team spirit. I know talking with Bryden, he's your new chief marketing manager. He came to GVG because he really enjoyed not only the growth that you're experiencing, but the team spirit. And he really is enjoying watching people grow, giving people responsibility, them achieving as a team, as one big group, the big goals that are being set. And whilst there's pressure and the responsibility of getting it right, because your reputation is everything, the reflection back to the single person, what's in it for me, what am I looking for, it's an attractive thing. But you've got to get that balance right. It does come down to trust. You still have to hit your numbers. You still have to not let someone else down. And I think that's a thing that is, you know, in the DNA of my business next Thursday, is that we've all worked together in past lives and we know what each person brings as their skill set and their strength. And we know the impact of letting someone else down or not doing your job to the standard that is expected of you, because guess what? The next person is expected to do that at that standard, because the flow-on effect is that the client is going to expect to see a certain standard. That's what they're paying for. Otherwise, they'll do it themselves. So I want to talk about the longer-term vision. I mean, it doesn't feel that far away, 2032, the Olympic Games. You know, everyone around a barbecue is talking about where are the people going to come from? How are we going to bring in the influx of subbies or the building industry to be able to do all the current growth, like your buildings, as well as all the construction and development for the Olympics? You're hearing and seeing things. You're at the coalface more than I am. What are people talking about? What are you seeing? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think it's going to be a heck of a struggle. I think it's going to be hard to get your tap washer replaced by a plumber. You know, it'll impact everyone. And no matter what, we saw it with Sydney. You know, people came from all over the place to build the infrastructure for Sydney. Because, you know, one day it'll be there and the next day the Olympics happen and everyone goes home. So, you know, these jobs are going to be permanent, or we're going to have people coming in to help out for, you know, the little push that it, or the big push it needs to get over the line. As far as what's happening, I think... it will bring about a required shift that's been talked about Peter Beattie's government. They were talking about trying to get more people through apprenticeships and getting more tradies on the ground. But there, I've yet to see anything sort of meaningful and concrete that's a collaborative effort between government, between the industry bodies, the master builders and CFMEU, for instance, the unions, with builders to be able to have some real meaningful efforts made to have a make a change there. We've been talking about it for a long time. The trading numbers that are required versus the trading numbers that we've got. The numbers that we've got don't seem to change.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think it's a collaborative effort. I must admit, I don't have the answers.
You're confident that we're going to have a stadium?
They'll get it done somehow. I'm probably less confident that that it won't. We won't have similar to post-COVID where those durations to deliver any project, a little extension on the back of the house will take longer because there will be less people to build your little extension on the back of the house. And our apartments will take longer. And you know, but just because, you know, there is a certain number of boots on the ground required to be able to deliver.
They're going to have to be smart about it and prefabrication, like technology and whatnot, that they're going to build these things a long way away and ship it up the Brisbane River, float it up and just literally click, 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 it's all done.
The challenge there is, especially in Australia, there's a real, and you talked about the block, there's a real need to have your own flavour, your own stamp. People don't want to have the same as everyone else. So the needs of homeowners are very, very much against that at the moment. You're seeing it with, you know, tiny homes that get stamped out. I know tiny homes are a growing thing in New Zealand. I'm not too sure I've seen so much of it over here, but mass-produced, carbon copy, you know, prefabricated
almost things. Shipping containers put together.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a building in China getting completely built from where to go in something like 40 days, and it was a 20-storey apartment building. And that was just a big Meccano set of prefabricated boxes being stacked one on top of the other, bolted to a foundation.
And you lose its soul.
Roof over the top. Yeah. But, I mean, it does get a roof over people's heads. It is a solution. Mm. So, yeah, I think there's elements of that that could help, especially in your affordable housing. You know, at the end of the day, there needs to be a compromise from, you know, probably everyone to be able to deliver things. I certainly think that there's an avenue for that in building the Olympic Athletes Village, for instance. I think at the Tokyo Games, they had cardboard beds. You know, so if they've got cardboard beds, they probably don't mind having the same room as each other.
Yeah, I think it's the most accessible games they're talking about, you know, making sure everyone can come and enjoy it. We're hearing it's going to be world class. The swimming stadium is going to be the best in the Southern Hemisphere. The list goes on. Of course, you're going to want to put those little sound bites on things. We're getting close to the end of our time. I just wanted to ask you, you're a great example of work-life balance. You know, you've got your family over in New Zealand and there's that ultimate level of trust in you. And at the same time, there's working on the business, not in the business and all that kind of stuff. But you are intimately up to date with what's going on with things. But there's a point where you come back and your value is seen and heard and felt. And then there's times where you can remove yourself so that people can do their job and get back to what they were doing and you can oversee from afar. How's that been your work-life balance for you? And how have you managed your accountability of you thinking, yes, I'm doing my job to the standard people expect of me, and there's what's expected, and then there's extra, there's a bonus where they say, wow, someone's really gone above and beyond here. We don't expect him to do that all the time, but we really, really appreciate what he's done there, and then bringing yourself back to a level where you're like, well, this is what's expected of me, of my job. I do just that. But also knowing your age, what's the next chapter for you? What's the next thing coming up for you in your life, for your family life, and also body, mind, spirit for you yourself, Simon?
Yeah, no, that's there's a fair bit in there to unpack. I suppose in a broader context, you know, when you say work-life balance or work-life blend, when you think of balance, you're looking at an old school scale where you've got, you know, work on one side and life on the other. Now, those scales are going to tip one way or the other from time, and that's probably pretty reflective of where my work-life blend balance lives at the moment. Right now in Brisbane, it's full on. When I'm here, you know, it's all about face-to-face, having meaningful discussions and being seen and seeing other people, hearing the vibe of the office, seeing what's going on, catching up, obviously, with the projects. Very much focused on doing what I can only do in Brisbane. So I wouldn't be having a conversation or a meeting that I could easily have as an online meeting. That means that you've got a balance skewed towards work, where I sit here right now, because I'm in Brisbane, my family's back in New Zealand. Now that could look for you or for one of our staff to look like, hey, I've got one of my family going through a bit of a crisis at the moment, and that's going to take a little bit of my focus. It could look like, hey, our son, little Johnny's gone and won the principal's award, and we want to go down to see that or watch the inter-school cross country because he's really or grandparents' day and you know, grandparents in a different country. That is flexibility. That is allowing that balance, I suppose, if that's what people are looking for. And there will be times when there's a deadline where, hey, performance, you know, and performance, you mentioned, the whether it's me or anyone else, that, you know, you've got to perform to a level, or you said earlier, hit your numbers, whatever that might look like. I think actually this whole conversation stems around performance. And I'm not talking performance at work, I'm talking performance in life, you know, performance in health, performance in fitness, performance as a husband, as a father, towards your sports club or whatever that might be, you know, mind, body, spirit. You have to have a level of performance at that allows you the time and the resource and the headspace and whatnot to give meaningful time to your relationships, give meaningful time to your work, because all of those things have a symbiotic relationship. If you haven't got your fitness or your family or your relationships or some of your own, you know, we all need some time to ourselves to do whatever our activity is, whether it's surfing, whether it's, you know, refereeing rugby or playing soccer, whatever that might be, being, you know, doing good for the community through the CEO Sleepout like you do, or working with the Rotary Club. That is something that is fulfilling us personally outside of work. So quite why it's sort of viewed two-dimensionally as a work-life balance, I think, you know, life's full of buckets.
One life.
Work is just one part of life. Spirit, you know, activities that we do.
And sometimes you need to go and have a barbecue with your mates and have a blow-off and just relax and take the pressure off, you know, and then sometimes you feel like as though you stretch too far in that you're out of balance and you need to go back to looking after yourself and giving back to yourself and being healthy to your mental space and your physical space.
Yeah, well, when I'm in Brisbane, when I've got back from being in Brisbane, I'm pretty sleep deprived. I've worked some crazy hours. I've been, you know, using a lot of my mental space and obviously my family buckets and my own personal interest buckets are pretty empty. So, you know, they need to be filled up a little bit more, and I'm going to need to put a bit more time and effort into those. And if I don't, then my work will suffer. And that's where I think, you know, going right back to the one of the first questions there, that that it comes from a genuine place to, if we want to have the best business, and we are a people-based business, we don't have robots and machinery pumping out widgets. Everything that we do relies on a human being making it happen. We need those people being happy at work, happy at life, fulfilled, and wanting and being in the best possible headspace to do that. And there are many things that we should be doing as a business, as leaders, as staff, you know, as in all walks of life, to try and promote, you know, having everything in balance and, you know, making sure that we blend it. And it needs to be accepted by staff, and it needs to be, you know, encouraged and promoted by employers, our tagline, or you know, what's been known as our tagline, but it's actually our
positioning.
Our positioning statement, our why statement is we care how you live. Mm. And our just cause, our purpose is to improve lives.
Mm.
Well, I don't want you missing your son's receiving the principal award.
Mm.
So, you know, I'm not living up to my own value if I don't allow you to do that.
Yep.
I also don't like not delivering our apartments to our customers on time. So that might mean a bit of a stressful couple of weeks leading up to a handover. But there needs to be that balance.
It's promises made to yourself. It's good communication, not only to yourself, but to other people. You know, the pillars of respect, respecting yourself, respecting others. You know, these are all pillars of what makes up good communities, good villages. Understanding there's a history of before you. There's some amazing talent that are coming out of university with the technology and their nous and the curiosity, and they've embraced AI and all those wonderful things that maybe us old dinosaurs at the age of 50 are going, oh, I don't even know if I want to even learn that. My brain's just not ready for that. Leave it to the experts, the young kids. But equally, what we've seen that are landmines that people have stood on in the past, if not ourselves, that we've seen blow up, and the cost of that to one's reputation or the business's reputation or the impact on not delivering something, or you know, something goes to print and it's a mistake, or you know, it means that you've got to run an apology letter in the newspaper. You know, we run a zero tolerance. You can't have anything go out the door that has a spelling mistake or something like a wrong price on a price point in a catalogue. You just can't afford it. My final question for you, because we're getting close to the end, we need to wrap this up, is you're heading back to New Zealand next week?
Yeah.
What are you most looking forward to when you head back?
Well, actually, I head back on my birthday, so I'm looking forward to seeing the family on my birthday. So I fly in. I won't see them when I wake up, but I'll see them when I get home. So that's probably something to look forward to. Not so much from my point of view, but I think it's more from the family being able to I've never been one to celebrate my own birthday, apart from the milestones. That mean I can have a really big party? No, we're still a few years away from the next big one.
Okay,
but awesome. Yeah, looking forward to that. And I just wanted to, I know we're close to the end, but I really wanted to jump on a word you mentioned there, village.
Yep.
You know, back when I was growing up, when I first started working, there was no mobile phones. When I was being brought up as a kid, we had two crappy TV channels. I had a mate with a Donkey Kong on some tape drive, and so we wanted to go down and play on some digital experience, would be down with him. But everything that we did for entertainment, for fulfillment, was community based. Mm-hmm. We'd be part of scout groups, we'd be part of sports clubs. We would go around and have barbecues at friends much more often, because that was our only way that we could get interaction, communication, fulfillment. And now, with the proliferation of social media and the digital world, which there are so many great things that can bring you, but it can also make us a little bit lazy and especially, you know, I don't want to put it all on the younger generation, because there's plenty of people our age that are also falling down the old scrolling trap and whatnot. But you can easily just try to get this fake fulfillment by digesting the latest TV series, you know, having your human interactions via Snapchat or whatever it might be. But when you mention village, you know, one of the last communities left for most people is actually work. There are not many villages, not many communities in our lives anymore. And if there are people that are having a bit of a void in their lives, there is a loneliness epidemic going on in the world.
It's one of our episodes. Yep.
Yeah. And if you take away the ability to connect through work, that what's going to fill that void? And that's what really worries me, especially for the younger generation. They're only going to learn work, they're only going to have life experience through lived life, and that's not in a Zoom meeting, because anyone can turn it on for a Zoom meeting. I don't know how you are in a Zoom meeting when we flick it on for 15, 30 minutes.
You see your own face.
Yep, and you might have been bawling your eyes out five minutes before. Yeah. You might be in a really bad place, and you can turn it on for that 15, 30 minutes.
Mm.
But it's those little those informal interactions. Mm-hmm. That's where the gold dust is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the same in families.
Mm-hmm.
We love going away on the trips and the holidays, and there's some great memories. But some of the most fulfilling, memorable moments are those little things, spur of the moment. They happen, just the little funny things, the sad things, the great things, the little one-liners, just those great nights you have around the fire pit that I sort of walked in. You know, the other community outside of family is work, and I think that can't be undervalued, and that's probably the essence of what we hold true in GBG. So.
Well, it sounds like you've got something to look forward to very soon, back with your family. And thank you for coming over and spending time with my family here today. I know we are like brothers. You know, it's more than just a work relationship. I really enjoy hanging out with you, talking with you, and today has been exactly that. So, Simon, thank you again.
Thank you. It's been enjoyable. Thanks, mate.
Okay, safe travels back, and happy birthday.
Thank you.
All right, cheers, mate.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of the No Time to Be Offended podcast. To follow us, like, and subscribe. And you'll find more content on all popular social media platforms. Search No Time to Be Offended. Stay tuned for the next episode. Until then, we hope you get the best out of your life.